The new album is definitely a new sound. Jimmy called it spring as opposed to winter. What was the starting point for you for writing it?
I mean, I think the starting point kind of came really, really early, kind of before Foremo was even put out on a record label. I had kind of finished the record, and then a few months later, I had started working on the riff and some of the opening music to the album, which is the song Perth. And it had a really long, I don't know what the word is, sort of birth. It kind of just continued to form itself over the course of 3 years. And so it's really hard to say, like, when did it start, because it happened so kind of metamorphously, if that's even a word, if that makes any sense. And it just sort of was really slow. And so, but slow and steady. And so, yeah, it kind of was all at once and all over the course of 3 years at the same time.
How much songwriting did you do for the album?
I mean, I did all the songwriting, I guess. I involved a lot of other people in the sort of second phase, as I call it, coming in to make musical kind of colorations. But the songwriting was sort of a part of sort of just some subconscious ramblings and attempting to discover new sonic space. I don't know how to say it without sounding like a totally uppity artsy guy, but just trying to explore some new sonic space with different instruments and different ways of recording those instruments, and seeing what I could come up with that way. And then bringing other people in really helped me take the songs to another place.
So did you start out writing just you and your guitar?
No, I kind of couldn't do that. It became impossible for me to just sit down with a guitar and start writing a song. And so all the songs on this record were all were written as they were recorded. And I think that gave me this unique opportunity to make sure that I was recording the guitar or keyboard or whatever instrument I was using in a particular song, to set it up to be something interesting sonically that was going to be fun and interesting to write around, you know, in the studio setting. So the writing process was sort of just intertwined with that, I guess.
So your rough draft of your demo version of the songs, you eventually had other great musicians you brought in to play the parts for the record, but you were playing like the keyboard and were you even playing like slide guitar or something?
Yeah, there's some, I mean, I played some drums, and a lot of the songs I'd say were pretty fleshed out by the time I brought in a lot of the people. Matt McCann and Sean Carey, I think, were there more in the beginning for me to help flesh out some of the drum parts. But I was playing some drums, I was playing some bass and keyboards and things like that, and also just experimenting with vocals the whole time. But yeah, then they kind of came in when I was ready to sort of add that second layer of color.
The album it's much more musical than Foremo. Was that a conscious aim for you?
I guess so. Not too much of there wasn't too much aim in general, I'd say, for this record. I think it ended up being a record that was very musical, because I think in many ways, as a musician growing up listening to a lot of different kind of music and being influenced by different types of recordings, I was really ready, I think, to make a record that involved a lot of that color. But I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want it to be an idea. I wanted it to be an expression rather than an idea. And it ended up becoming an expression that is an idea, which was a nice place to end up.
Expression versus idea. Can you elaborate slightly?
Sure. No, yeah. That's great. I think an idea, I mean, we can all sit around and sort of be like, wouldn't it be cool if you could get two rhinoceroses to stand upside down and then paint them red, and then everyone would look at it because it would mean this and that or something, you know, like some kind of artistic thing for art's sake, art for art's sake, or improvisation for improvisation's sake. I think that's cool. And there's been plenty of people that have furthered, you know, the envelope in art and music because of their experimentation. But I think for me, the music that I've really mostly always, that has resounded with me, and art as well, is when it feels a little bit like it's coming from a person, and it's coming from a visceral place, a place that is maybe trying to attempt to explain something that isn't quite explained yet, you know. And I guess that's what I was trying to do. And I think by kind of trying to write songs in a subconscious way, I've ended up with something I'm pretty proud of that I didn't really know I was capable of doing.
And that carries over to your lyrics. You chose a lot of interesting words.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I spent a lot of time on these words on this record, and I kind of miss writing songs the way that I used to write songs, in the sense that I would just sort of sit down and all these words that like told a story would come out. There's one Bon Iver song called Blood Bank that sort of is more representative of sort of an older lineage of songs, which I like, and I sort of miss, but it just doesn't happen anymore for me, and I sort of gets stuck in a good way into this other sort of subconscious zone. And I think I just sort of sit down and sing sounds and sing melodies on top of whatever music is going on until they sort of seem like they're a form, even if the words don't make any sense. And then I just sort of like listen for weeks and months and jot down what they sound like, what those sounds sound like. And then I start to type them up, and then I see if they make any sense and what it could mean and how the certain images sort of bend and refract into certain things. And I end up with meaningful songs about things I didn't even know that I needed to be writing about. And I don't know, it's just a process that I'm kind of getting addicted to, I guess, because of how fun and discovery it is.
You put a lot of thought into the words. Is there to you a clear meaning that you know of, or is it you're letting that be up for debate?
Yeah, I think, well, for me, a good example, I think, for me to reference is a song from Foreemma, which is Flume. And it's still like this song that I enjoy playing every night because it's got these images that I can sort of be in. There's like things that happen in the song that I can go to and be in, and it can be sort of changing every night. And I think I got kind of really into that thought that a song could change and kind of breathe and bleed and all these things. And so the lyrics in the new record, I really used Flume as like a lyrical inspiration or jumping off point. And because I think the songs on the new record, they all mean something to me, but they all can kind of change and sort of trick me and trick people, and not trick, but you know, like the song isn't trying to say something so obvious that it's like law or something, you know, like it like all things, like those kind of boundaries need to change.
Relating to your lyrics, your song titles, I want to say they're all places, although what is Holocene?
Yeah, Holocene. Holocene is it's a bar in Portland, Oregon, but it's also the name of a geologic era, an epoch, if you will. So it's kind of like it's a good example. I think all the songs are meant to sort of come together as like this this idea that, you know, places are times and people are places and times are people. I don't know. They're, you know, like they can all be different and the same at the same time, I guess. Well, that's what our lives feel like, are these epochs, you know, but we're really, and that's kind of what that song's about. You know, once I knew I was not magnificent, it's like our lives feel like these epochs, but really we are, you know, dust in the wind or whatever, you know. But I think that there's a significance in that insignificance that I was trying to look at in that song, I think.
You have a strong attachment to Eau Claire. It's reflected in your music. Yet your music is sort of what takes you away from it. And you're going on tour soon. Is that like a contradictory, that your music has led you away in some ways?
Yeah, it does feel weird. Like, I get kind of homesick, and I think that when I was a camp counselor growing up, when a kid would get homesick, you just kind of want to tell him, like, hey, just buck up and try to be a little more present, man. Like, look around and see how lucky you are. So I think my relationship with Eau Claire is really good, and I love it here. But I wonder if I'm just not kind of a soft country kid who doesn't know how to fit into the larger world or something sometimes. But I love going on tour. I'm excited this time. I think I've got, like, personally, I'm a lot more ready this time. But it's a little daunting to be like, I'm leaving for how long? How many weeks this year I'm not going to be home. You know, I think it's just like growing up and spending the first 25 years in the same place, basically, just like not really knowing anything different. It's an adjustment, but one that I'm like willing to look at.
Oh, you're a country boy, though, that hangs out with Kanye West. It's pretty...
Yeah, I guess. To be honest with you, I'm really happy that I'm able to be successful and things, but I kind of learned through having good friends early on that you can't believe anything they say, especially the good stuff, because I think it can be just as distracting. And I think that I'm just really happy and proud to be like playing music every day and working on music. But the recognition is really cool, but it can also be kind of scary, you know?
Your album For Emma Forever Go, it was on virtually every best of 2008 list and on the top of so many. Did you feel a ton of pressure going into your next project?
I really didn't. I just was so excited, and I had felt like I deserved it for so long, but that I was happy that I, you know, one of my earlier projects hadn't been the thing to spring me or something, because I had felt proud of For Emma and that it made sense. And I knew that part of what For Emma meant to me was that it was an element of change, an autumnal sort of recycling of spirit or something. And I knew that what I had to do for the next album was just simply make a record for me, and that it would be successful even if it sold 5 copies or no copies and I just gave it to my friends or something. You know, like, that would have been successful to me.
When you're writing For Emma at your dad's cabin, I've read that you were sort of at a lower point in your life. What was your state of mind over, I guess, the 3 years since you spent 3 years writing, in writing these songs?
Well, I think it's what's interesting about the time at the cabin and the months prior and the months after. It was low, but it was more like an opportunity. It was sort of like an apex of being like, there's choices that you can make. You know, you've grown up, you're now 25, 26 years old. You've grown up and now you have to realize that you're kind of in control of most of the stuff happening in your life. And if you're not happy about them, you have to actually do something about it. And I think that the evident, you know, then there are dark times, you know, during the firmer tours too, or I was homesick or I was not figuring stuff out or whatever. But I think the last 3 years has just been mostly about getting patted on the back every time that I make a decision that is good, that isn't based on some, you know, bad set of points, you know, something that's good for community or good for music or good for anything, and not based on any other decisions. And I think trying to get healthy and trying to treat myself better and treat people around me better and all that, I don't know, it's just like it's much healthier now. And I have the album to thank for that, but not because of the success that it brought, but because it was like my last chance to do something, to actually like step out and to be myself and to not edit anymore. And I think as a metaphor for the rest of my life, it's just kind of everything keeps growing and glowing at the same time.
Let's talk about some specific songs. We talked about Holocene. Mm-hmm. Now, a song that's getting a ton of attention, Beth Rest.
Mm-hmm.
Did you expect like people to zero in on this one?
You know, I might have messed up and not expecting them to latch onto it. But I think that it makes sense that people are latching onto it. People are latching onto that one because it seems like a statement, or it seems like it might be ironic, or it might seem like I'm trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes, or they're just playing not into keyboard sounds like that, you know? And I don't feel defensive about it, you know? I think that for me, I didn't think about it that much when I made that song. And when I made it, I was like, I love this song. I really needed to write this song. And I need it to be last on this record. I need to close out the record with this song and what it's saying and how it relates to Perth and musically and lyrically.
So what is it saying and how does it relate to Perth?
Well, Perth is kind of like this awakening or this birth. And And it's to relate it to some of the conversation that we've been having. It's sort of that moment when you have decided to wake up and to take control and to become. And Beth rest is the death, but it's a good death. It's good winter, you know. But it's a rest. It's not this final thing. It's like Beth seems like this really cool name for a place where you just go to like be in paradise forever or something.
That's your name for. That's what you associate with that. It's not a real place.
No. Yeah. Right. And it's a lady's name too. And it's like rest. It's this ongoing thing. And Beth rest. The song. It just sounds like forever. It's like it's kind of like timeless, and you can like be lofted up into these very high places during that song, and that's what it sounds like to me. And I don't blame people for like having their opinions about. Well, it sounds like Steve Winwood or blah blah blah. But I really don't blame people for having that. But I think for me, I think it's kind of silly to like judge something based on some production facility. It's like my favorite song. It's the last thing I want you to go away with. It's like innocent and it's. I don't want it to be some 80s throwback song. I want it to be like a current. I get lost in this song and I love everything about it, and it has nothing to do with any sort of like collective social reason, you know.
You said it's your favorite song on the record?
Yeah, sometimes. Most of the time it's just like, gosh, this feels so good. It's just like happy and like I want to play this song all the time. Beth Rest was more just for that certain someone, you know, like Calgary sort of introduces that idea. The whole album, man, I could go on for so many hours. It's so silly.
That's good that you can, because I'm sure that total cumulative you have in all these interviews.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But it's the whole thing, man. It's a whole story. It's like eventually you start waking up to the fact that you might be ready to spend your life with somebody and still like feel good about who you are and what kind of changes you're going to go through no matter what. And Beth Rest is that reward. It's that place that you get to be in for the rest of your life.
Is that related to anything personal that's going on?
Well, it's weird. It is, but what's weird is that the record was sort of like imagined before any of this new personal relationship stuff had happened. You know, I'm in a really, really good, loving relationship right now. It's really rewarding. But what's weird is that the songs kind of came as this predecessor, as like an invitation, I guess, to tell myself that I was open to it and that I was open to knowing that there wasn't going to be somebody coming along who's going to change me and want to change who I was, and like they were going to let me be who I wanted to be and like me for it. And then it just sort of like happened as soon as I finished writing the song.
And next, write a song about winning the lottery.
There you go. Damn it. I don't know what to do.
In this album, or maybe it's just in the last year or two, you've really emerged to me as like a singer. Like you're one of those few guys, I feel like, who is willing to, like when you were on Jimmy Fallon, you just took the stage and sang.
sort of.
Has that been a change for you? Or are you feeling sort of more confident about your voice, or more like in tune with it?
Yeah, for sure I am. I think I've been singing since I was 12, and I think that all the information is finally starting to chill out, and I don't have to like try to be fancy or something. I can just kind of do things and simplify things and try to be the best singer that I can be. And you know, like I had a lot of voice problems on the Frema tours, and now I think like my voice isn't hurting as much, and I know how to take care of it better. And I don't know. I like it, you know. I try to get better at it and try to be able to know when I'm in control and know when I'm out of control, and just and work on those, you know, the periphery where I'm not so good.
And you said you used to sort of have a hootie voice.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear that potential.
Yeah, oh my gosh. It was like Eddie Vedder, me, Tootie and the Blowfish, Dave Matthews situation forever.
It would have been a very different album today if you had not.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Thank you so much for talking with me and for taking a break from rehearsing.
Oh, no worries, not at all. It's a pleasure talking to you.